The following podcast may contain mature themes and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the No Fear Project podcast. I'm your host, Pete D'Amico. This is the culmination of interviews I did on parenting fears before the pandemic really hit. Today, we are joined by Kim Halley-Hetrick. Kim and her family are facing a scary situation, with her young son needing major surgery. Pack on top of that the beginning of the pandemic and Kim's role in the healthcare industry, and you have a situation where fear is certainly present. Kim's strength, as well as her son's, is evident throughout this talk. She is insightful and courageous. I predict this will impact all of you in a profound way. Kim also happens to be a fellow Silver Fox athlete, and we will start the discussion with her right after this quick word from our sponsor, Silver Fox Athletics. The pandemic has thrown a wrench into our lives, including our athletic goals. We are all on the hunt for help to get back on track or find ways to improve even as races are canceled. That's where Coach Andy and Silver Fox Athletics can help. Coach Andy can help you with your goals and to maintain consistency in a world without races. I've worked with Andy for a couple of years, and he has helped me overcome my fears while hitting fitness heights I never thought possible. Coach Andy concentrates on middle and back of the pack runners, so all you need is a desire to move, and he will set you up with a plan. Get more information about Silver Fox Athletics at silverfoxathletics.org. Also, follow Silver Fox Athletics on Instagram. While you are there, click book to get your free initial consultation with Coach Andy. Make sure to tell him you heard about Silver Fox on the No Fear Project. We are now joined by our guest, Kim, and we really thank you for coming here on to the No Fear Project. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself?
Okay, so I'm Kim Halley-Hetrick. I'm from outside of Rochester, New York, in the Finger Lakes region. And I have a wonderful husband, who some of you might know, if you've been around Pete's stuff for long, Jeff, he's part of Sub 30. And then I have two little boys. I have Holden, who is 6 years old, and Connor, who is 5 years old.
Fantastic. And I'm super jealous that you're in the Finger Lakes. I love that area.
Oh, good. So, yeah, we can see one of the lakes from our new house that we just moved into in November. We can see the tip of the lake right now because there's no leaves. I make no guarantees what it's going to look like in the summertime.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, and, you know, me being a big wine person, Finger Lakes is actually one of my favorite little unknown regions. Yes. So
the Napa Valley of the East Coast.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're here to talk about some parenting fears. So why don't you give us a little rundown about what's going on in your life.
Okay. So Connor, my five-year-old, back when he was about three, started getting some pretty bad headaches. Very, you know, rarely, once in a while, if he had a cold, he'd get these headaches. And then, you know, if he was really stuffy, he'd get these headaches. And it continued up to his 5 months or while his four-year-old, five-year-old checkup with our PCP, she said, oh, you know, how are the headaches? And we said, you know, they're still there, and sometimes they're really bad. Like, knocked him down from a birthday party crying we had to leave because he was in such a bad way. But he was, you know, he was getting over a cold, so we thought maybe it was okay. And she said, oh, you know what? Let's just, to be super cautious, send you to a neurologist and have him get checked out. So we're like, okay, no problem. That was last summer, you know, like July, August timeframe. So we get in with the neurologist fairly quickly, and she does a neuro exam. It's fairly normal, but she's like, you know, there's a couple of things that this could be. Maybe we should get an MRI, maybe not. Like, I don't know. It could be costly. And I just looked at her and I said, he's my kid. If he needs an MRI, I don't care about the cost. Let's go get an MRI. And so she's like, okay, let's do it. And we went and got an MRI, and Connor was diagnosed with Chiari malformation of the brain, which means that the tonsils, I know it sounds funny, but in the back of your brain, you have two tonsils, one on each lobe, and those sit past the cerebellum down at the bottom. His tonsils are extended down into his spinal cord. So at the base of your skull, you have a hole where your spinal cord comes out. His spinal cord and brain matter comes out, and his brain matter comes out for about 17 millimeters, which is really significant. And so we found that out in August. And the one point you're like, oh my God, thank God he does not have a brain tumor, because that's what we were worried about for a while. It's Chiari, and we know other people who have had Chiari, and they're okay. They're functioning adults, and so it's fine. And our neurologist was kind of like, oh, you know, okay, yep, he has Chiari. I also think he has pediatric migraine. We're like, okay. So we started treating him for migraine. It did nothing to resolve his headache. And our pediatrician, who's amazing, said to us, you know what, I really want you to see a neurosurgeon. We're like, okay, let's go see a neurosurgeon. And that, we went here locally in the Rochester area. We met with a neurosurgeon. We had a horrible experience. We did not like it at all. And I started researching. So I was a mom on a mission. And I went to every Facebook group, every online resource I could find, and found a neurosurgeon who specializes in Chiari down in New York City. So that's not like a quick trip for us where we are in New York. That is a 6-hour drive down to New York City to see the neurosurgeon. And we said, okay, let's do it. Let's call and get an appointment. So they're fabulous down there. You call, they're like, yep, let's get you all the information. Send us all of his records, da, 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 da. They want you to digitally upload the MRI. So that was a feat in and of itself. So I get all those images. I send them off. They schedule us an appointment. This is probably like late October. They schedule us an appointment in December. And we're like, okay, cool. First week of November comes around. The office calls us and says, we got the MRI images. They want to see you this week. And we were like, what? This week? We were also buying a new house, right? So I was like, yeah, we close on the house on Thursday. I can't be there on Friday. This is not going to work. So they're like, okay, well, could you come the next week? And we're like, sure, we'll come the next week. So we're lucky enough to have really close friends down in that area in New Jersey. And we went down and stayed with them overnight. They drove us to our appointment because they're amazing people. And we walked in. We saw the neurosurgeon. And he was amazed at what he saw. So from the images, he expected a kid to come in that was not functioning. He said that they looked so severe to him that he thought we would have a kid who was not swallowing well, who was not walking well, all these things. And although looking back, we have more symptoms than just headaches, we didn't have symptoms that were saying to us, oh my God, he's in a really bad way and we need to take care of it right now. So in seeing that, you know, he looked at the MRI images with us again and said, okay, here's the thing. That hole that you have in the bottom of your skull that goes down, in Connor's specific case is bigger than the average 5-year-old. So he is not having all the symptoms he could possibly have because he doesn't, have the compression that some people would have just because of his natural body shape, I guess, you know, the shape of his skull. So he said, let's see you back in 6 months. And we're like, okay, sounds good. He's like, if it gets worse, if it gets better, whatever, you know, we'll see you back in 6 months. So we are coming up on that 6-month appointment in May, and Connor's symptoms have worsened. So we were put in the position recently of having to decide if we were going to put our 5-year-old into an operating room to have his brain operated on. So that's what led me to speak to you, was that here is our, you know, our situation, our fear of, you know, everything. I mean, what fear do you have for your kid? I think we all fear certain things, like, am I raising my child right? Do they act like a normal kid? Are these crazy behaviors at home what these teachers at school see? Like, we all have those things, right? And I don't think those are fears as much as they are worries, in my own opinion. But the idea of laying your kid down on a table, cutting open the back of their head, breaking part of their spinal column, so their actual spine part of that gets broken off, and then opening up the protective layer to the brain and potentially removing brain tissue that, in our case, the neurosurgeon thinks he does have dead brain tissue. So having to remove that and then put this kid all back together and say, you're okay, is the scariest thing I have ever looked at doing, ever.
Yeah, I first of all, I can't even imagine. So, I mean, I've got some questions here, but the first thing I'll say is fear is often described as something that's irrational. I don't think it's irrational for you to have a lot of worry to the point of fear when your child is going to undergo any surgery, much less something like this, something this major, right? So the first, I'm just kind of curious, how common is Chiari in children?
So way more common than we originally would think. So MRIs weren't regularly used until the 1980s. So before then, if you had headaches, okay, you got migraines, right? That's it. You just have migraines. And still, a ton of kids are misdiagnosed with, it's a migraine. Don't worry about it. Had we not pushed to have the MRI, because financially, I don't care. I will pay off the bills. I work for the same hospital. Like, I'll figure it out. It would have been missed in our case too. And just by chance, it wasn't. So I can't give you a percentage, but I can tell you that the percentage over the last 10 years is significantly increased because the MRI is there as a diagnostic tool. And a lot of kids that have Chiari have scoliosis, and their scoliosis can be blamed on a lot of things, but if they have a headache and scoliosis, it's worth getting checked out, because these headaches are not, you know, I get migraines. Could I have Chiari? I don't, maybe. They don't know if it's genetic. They don't know a ton about how you end up with it. Connor was a surprise pregnancy for us. So I drank alcohol. I took cold medicine. I did all this stuff that I didn't do with my first pregnancy. My older son doesn't get headaches. My little one does. And we have no idea. Could it be that? Could it be a genetic thing? I don't know. But it's more common to see it and diagnose it now than it would have been 20 years ago, by far. I mean, the amount of people I see, I personally know two other people with Chiari, which is kind of mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
Because you say Chiari, and people don't know. You're like, Chiari. They're like, what is Chiari?
Right.
And you have to be like, well, his brain's flipping out of his where it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I went through an MRI for migraines, and that was not a pleasant experience.
No.
How,
he did so good.
Yeah, I was going to ask how Connor did with that.
So we are lucky in that here in Rochester, we have the Galisano Children's Hospital at Strong. And they have two pediatric MRI machines. One is a pirate ship, and one is more of like, I don't know, it's not a whole room thing. You still have to go into the machine, and it looks like it's got a seascape. We actually ended up having two MRIs, so we've been in both. But his first MRI, they came in and they're like, here's your movie list. What movie would you like to watch? And we were like, okay, let's do this. Like, can you watch a movie and not move? So he picked out a movie he wanted to see. I don't know if it was Alvin and the Chipmunks or what, but he wanted to see it. And they put this mask on him that projects the movies right close to his eyes so he can see it. They did have to stop it one time and say, buddy, you got to stop laughing, because he was giggling at the movie. And so he was moving. And that MRI led us to have a full spinal MRI. So they wanted to do the full spinal column to make sure that his spinal cord was not separating at all. So that is one thing that can happen with Chiari, is that you get a pressure buildup in your head from spinal fluid that can get in, but it can't get out. And so he has a compression. That's what causes the headaches. His spinal fluid goes in, doesn't come out real well. So they wanted to make sure that nowhere else did that pressure build up to the point where his spinal cord started to separate. So they had to do a full one. For that, they were like, we need to knock him out. I'm like, dear God, yes, you do. Because that was going to be about 2 hours long. So for that one, they knocked him out. He wasn't thrilled about it, but we got to put on a scrub. He and I both did for him so that he could, you know, go back. And they gave him a mask, which they put scented lip balm inside of, so that when he's breathing in the, whatever it is that you even put to sleep, while he was breathing that in, it would smell like watermelon, and you got to put stickers on it. I mean, if you have a sick kid, go to a pediatric hospital. If you have to travel, go to a pediatric hospital, because the difference between being an adult and being in a scary situation and being a kid and being in a scary situation is all those things the pediatric hospital is going to take care of for you. They're going to have toys there for you. They're going to have movies there for you. They're going to let mom come back with the kid as far as possible. I mean, for his first MRI, I sat with him the whole time. The second MRI, I went back with him, and when he was asleep, they took me back up, and then they brought him right back to me, and Jeff and I were able to sit with him in recovery. Kids recovering from anesthesia is rough. I don't recommend it for anybody looking for a good time. They get a little angry and belligerent, and whew. He argued with the anesthesiologist. It was fun.
That's awesome.
They're great. Yeah. So it went well for us.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice, because I think that we try often to project what we're thinking and feeling onto a kid. And it's so different. And that's another piece that I really want to back up and start to try to dive into is kind of what, as this is happening, how are you feeling?
It's not a brain tumor.
Okay, so you were looking on the positive side.
I just by my nature and the things I've been through in my life, I have a unique outlook on fear and life and how we get through things. At 16, I myself was in a car accident that left me in the middle of a field with no help. And I had been knocked unconscious for quite some time. We're not sure how long, but I had bleached blonde hair. And by the time the EMTs got to me, they thought that I had bleached my hair red. So I was upside down bleeding for a long time, and I ended up having to walk a mile to get somebody to get me help to go to the hospital, right? So I ended up having to break a window in the car, climb out of the car, figure out what direction to go in, and go get myself help. So at 16 years old, to have that experience really changed a lot of things for me. Like, a lot of things I look at and I'm like, why would I be afraid of this? It's not, you know, there's nothing that's going to kill me, and I've already survived that, you know, one horrific thing that I had to deal with. So for me, it's a lot of positive, it's no regret, and it's dealing with the situation. So even if you're scared, to just be like, it's just a situation. We're going to deal with it, and we're going to get through it. So his diagnosis was scary, but at the same time, we weren't like, oh my God, we have a kid with cancer. Like, I was really afraid of a brain tumor and really afraid of cancer. I reached out to our friend Susan Hurd and I said, what do I do? How do I do this? I reached out to another friend of ours, Jen Love, and was like, you're a PICU nurse. Like, tell me how I'm going to handle it. Like, what do I do? And they were just like, one day at a time, see what happens. And, you know, you're going to figure it out. So having that supply of friends and people to talk to was useful. And then when it came to Chiari, you know, they were like, Chiari, my husband and I were both like, oh, good. You know, like, you had that relief. And I think that relief lasted for us for a few months until we got that call where the neurosurgeon said, you know, it was like a Tuesday. We want to see you on Friday. That is heart-wrenching, because all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, this is really, you know, this is serious. They want to see us now. Whereas the other neurosurgeon was just like, we can do surgery or we cannot. It's up to you. And they're like, what? So I guess looking at it in terms of trying to be positive and not have those crazy moments where you lose it, it was hard. Because you rode on that high of, it's not a brain tumor, it's not cancer, for a while, you know, 2.5 months, 2 months. And then to have the neurosurgeon be like, we need to see you right now. That was scary in that you don't know what you're walking into. But I do try and have, like I said, I just try and be positive, right? Like, yeah. I just want to get through this. We can handle this. That's what I say to my husband all the time. I'm like, we can handle this. We can do this. What do we need to do this? I do it at work too. People at work are scared of everything. They're like, ooh, I don't want to talk to my supervisor or whatever. I'm like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Is that I'm going to fire you? I doubt it. So like, just do it. Just move on and do it. Don't don't worry about every single thing of every single second of the day. Like, you're going to drive yourself crazy. Just do stuff. And it is what it is. My father's always said that to me. It is what it is. And so it's like, okay, it is what it is. I'm going to say what I need to say. And if I have to deal with bad consequences, I will. I'm going to do what I have to do. And if I have to deal with consequences, I will. So really just trying to, you know, be positive and trying to explain those things to the boys. And my 6-year-old is super protective of my 5-year-old. And so when we had to sit them down and say, hey, you know, there's something wrong with Connor's brain and he's likely going to need brain surgery, my 6-year-old immediately was like, nope, he doesn't. He's fine. And we're like, buddy, no, like, don't say that because then he's going to think he doesn't. And he just looks at you and he's like, Mom, I'm just trying to have him not be scared. And you're like, yeah, dude, can you tell me that too? Like, right. I'm scared too. But yeah, so I guess I think I circled around that probably way too far. But trying to be positive and be like, we're going to deal with this. And, you know, the scariest thing is the period of time where we know the appointment's coming up and we have to make a decision. And that I struggled a lot. Like, Coach Andy, running coach that we both love, he, at one point I messaged him and I was like, I am having a hard time running because that is a time where I am alone with my thoughts and my thoughts are on my kid and what we have to decide for him. Making a decision for another human being is, I think, the scariest thing ever, right? Like, he can't have input. He doesn't understand the situation. And I am making a decision now that will affect him literally for the rest of his life. And we're not talking like, hey, your shoulder dislocates every day. We're going to shorten up the tendons and you're going to be fine. No, like, if they could go into his brain, what if they nick something? He may never walk again. He may never talk again. I don't know. This is an amazing surgeon. That's not going to happen. That's what I tell myself. That's how I deal with it. It's just not going to happen. Everything will be fine.
It sounds to me like there's a couple of things going on in terms of how you're managing the fear, which is, one, your life experience, which is different than the majority of people because you having such a traumatic, and I mean, I'm going to put words in your mouth, but you didn't say near death, but it sounded near death experience at 16.
Oh yeah.
To be that hurt and have the strength to go and find help. So that starts to shape how you look at all things in life, including fear. And then you've got your husband. So you guys are talking, and I'm going to circle back to that in a second. And you acknowledge fear also by reaching out to others who have been in situations that can help you. Mm-hmm. For Jennifer, it's the fact that she's a PICU nurse, right? So that helps because she sees that all the time, understands kind of what's going on and can talk through that concerns from that perspective. And then Susan, who has gone through with losing a child and has a perspective of how she dealt with things then and continues to. I mean, she's one of the most open people ever. And if anybody wants to hear an interview with her, although I'm sure we'll talk to her at some point also here, but I did a long form interview on Fat Man Chronicles with her. That's just fantastic. So anyway, long way of saying is I don't believe that you were not acknowledging fear, but instead were finding the tools in your arsenal to cope with it. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. So I am not somebody to shy away from anything, right? I'm not going to shy away from a challenge. I'm not going to shy away from conflict. I'm not going to shy away from my fear. I'm just not. And so for me, it's like, okay, if I can information the life out of anything, I will. Give me all the information because I need to know so I can plan, so I can be ready and I can deal with it. And reaching out to people that deal with it. I mean, Jen would be like, okay, make sure they do this for you in the hospital when you go for your MRI. Make sure you ask for that. And she knows that stuff. So it's like, oh, good. I can make my kid happier no matter what he's depending with or whatever he's dealing with. And then reaching out to Susan and being like, hey, how do I deal with this? I mean, that's really what it was when I reached out to her. I was like, here's what's happening. I don't know. I reached out to her before we had a diagnosis. And I said, he's going in for an MRI, and I'm scared out of my mind. Like, whatever this could be, you know, horrible, right? Like, I could be looking at losing my kid. And their advice, their experience, I mean, I say reach out to anyone and everyone that you can that you think you're going to get information out of that is useful to you, no matter what your fear is. Like, if you have a fear of heights, go talk to somebody that flies a plane, you know, right. Like, find out what you're afraid of. And I think a lot of times people don't do that, right? They don't know what they're afraid of. They just know that there's fear. And so they skirt around that topic. Like, I'm afraid of looking for a new job, so I'm just going to have the job I have and keep that. Well, why are you afraid of looking at a new job? Are you afraid of the rejection of not getting the job? Are you afraid because you don't like talking in interviews? Are you afraid, you know, for all these other reasons? And looking at that and then talking to people that do that, you know, if you're afraid to interview, go talk to somebody who coaches people on interview. Make yourself more comfortable in that situation. And I think part of that is, what do we all have a fear of sometimes? We have a fear that other people are going to be like, why don't you know? Why can't you do that? What, you know, like, they're going to judge us. We have a fear of being judged. Lose that. You know, who cares? I am a mother of two, and I have a mohawk haircut. Okay, it's a faux hawk. So I don't care. I don't care what other people are going to think of me. Yes, I want to be professional because I am a hospital administrator. I want to be professional. But at the same time, I also am a little crazy, and I'm going to do what I want. And so, you know, go talk to the people about your fears. Susan was great and was like, anything you need, let me know. The other person, in the middle of all this, we sold our house and moved in with my in-laws. Okay.
No pressure there.
Take a minute. Right. Just take a minute and think about that. I moved in with Jeff's parents for 5 months in the middle of dealing with all this. My in-laws are amazing. That needs to go out to, you know, everyone who listens to podcasts. My John and Kathy are amazing. They let us move in, all four of us with them. But when you don't have your own space and you're trying to process these things, sometimes that results in phone calls to friends who live states away, your running friends in my particular case, and being like, I'm losing my mind. I am losing it, and I need to talk to somebody. Talking. I talk a lot. Can you tell? I just talk a lot.
That's helpful, right? It's helpful. So
it is.
Why not do that? And speaking of that, how are the conversations with your husband? How are the conversations with Jeff during this time?
We are weird people. So we drive to work together almost every single day. We drive home together almost every single day. And is my boss listening? We message on Google back and forth a lot during the day. So, God, I hope my boss doesn't know how to get to podcasts. not for you. I hope she can for you, but not for me.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, we did a lot of talking, and we do a lot of our talking through Google Chat because that's when we have downtime. Jeff is not a great conflict resolution person. He doesn't like conflict. He doesn't like dealing with people who are mad at him. So if we have fights, like, it just doesn't go well. I have to remember to slow it down and back off and let him have time to process things. So talking on GChat, is good for us because we can say something and then we know we're not going to respond right away. I might send him a message and go to a 2-hour meeting. So if I don't get right back to him, he doesn't care. And I have the same thing with him. Like, you might send me something. I might not respond. You might not respond, and it's fine. So we did a lot of our conversations around this while at work and, you know, talking. And then you can find links. So, like, I would send him 5 or 6 YouTube videos. Like, hey, this is the surgeon we're going to go see, and this is what he's talking about. Or, hey, I watched a lot of YouTube about Chiari, and I would send that to him, and we would talk about it. And then we would briefly talk about it in person, like, on our ride home, right, because the kids aren't there with us. So we can talk about it there a little bit. At night at home, we don't talk about anything, right? So we literally, we get home, we feed the kids, I run two nights a week. So it means we get home, I go out for a training run, I come back, we get the kids in bed, I eat dinner, we sit down and watch Frankie and Grace on Netflix. And then we go to bed. So there's not a whole lot of quality talk time there. It's mostly on our way back and forth to work and through GChat. But as we got closer and closer to the date that I kind of had predetermined in my mind as the we need to know if we're doing surgery this summer or not, I had to talk to him more in person. Like, hey, we should talk about this tonight. Hey, we should talk about this. And finally, we had a day where the two of us could go on a run together. So we had to do a 10K run, just a training run. And so we started running and I started talking about it and was like, you know, we really need to decide. And so we talked about our fears about making the decision for him and could there be bad outcomes. Jeff's not great with gray area. This is all gray area. He likes black and white. He's an engineer, man. It is or it isn't. And this is totally an unknown. We don't know what the outcome will be. I mean, he could have surgery this summer and then need surgery again in another year. That's just how Chiari works. So, you know, really talking about what we thought was best. And then, you know, we have come to the decision about surgery because his symptoms changed and we've been dealing with more symptoms. So, you know, that kind of helped us push, but have those conversations. I think when you're dealing with kids, and I think it doesn't matter if you have a great relationship with your spouse or you're separated from your spouse or you know, you never were a thing and you just have a kid together, whatever. You have to figure out how to communicate with each other in a way that works. And it doesn't work for everyone to sit down face to face and hash it out. It works for a lot of people, but not everybody, right? So I know that Jeff and I communicate really good electronically. We're going to be able to give him the process time he needs, and I'm going to be able to go back to that conversation in 6 months and say, look what you told me. Ha, ha, ha. So warning, guys, GChat, great for communication, also searchable in the future. So,
right. Yeah.
Don't say they were right if they weren't.
That's an interesting one because I think about that I struggle with that kind of asynchronous communication. Mm-hmm. And Jeff obviously thrives on it. And it sounds like either you do too or you've adapted to it, which is great. I mean, you've got to find ways to communicate. Were you guys on the same page then most of the time or just at the end? Like, were you pulling and rowing the boat in the same direction?
In life, Jeff and I are always in the same book. I tend to be one or two chapters ahead. So I'm ahead. I was pretty sure all along that we would be headed towards surgery. Didn't know when, you know, really, was kind of working my way towards the decision that I was pretty sure we were going to have to make. And it's more like pulling Jeff along in the boat behind me and being like, okay, I think this is where we're headed. And then feeding him all the information that have led me to my decision to help him formulate his decision. Often I make decisions without all of his input, which is a horrible thing for me to do. And I realize that, and he'll be like, you didn't even talk to me about that. He forgives me because he's a forgiving person. But this was one situation where I very clearly had even said to him, like, I cannot make this decision without your input. I cannot do this alone. I need you. I'm relying on you. And I'm a particularly strong individual. And to say that to somebody, like, I'm serious. And he knew that, right? So although, like I said, in the same book, turn in the same pages. I just typically am turning them a little bit faster. But this was one situation where he caught up as Connor's symptoms changed and morphed a little bit from being just headaches to nausea, saying his eyeballs feel like they're going to pop out, things like that. Like, it got to the point where we were like, yeah, I think we're headed this way. And, you know, it was about a week and a half ago that Jeff was like, yeah, I think we have to do this. And I said, yeah, I think you're right. You know, neither one of you wants to be the one to say it, even though you're both there. So we were always in the same direction. And a lot of times, I think with your kids, you are. And there's times when you're not. I guarantee, you know, any parent's going to say, well, mom wanted this and dad wanted this, and they were not the same thing. But I think when you're dealing with situations where it's life-threatening stuff, it would be a rarity. It'd be like one of the people that you find on like some crazy talk show, right? That would be like, well, I didn't want to save my kid's life. It wasn't worth it. And the other parent's like, yes, I did. In general, in these situations, I think most people are like, this is my kid and I would do anything. I would cut off my arm. I would trade brains, right? I would be like, you can have my brain if it would fix it. So we were on the same wavelength. We were just on different parts of it at times, and we've come together to be, you know, united in what has to happen.
That's good. Does Connor know what's coming then?
So we talked to him about it originally and said, you know, you're probably going to have surgery. And he was like, oh, no, I'm not. I don't like, no, that was it. Just no, I'm not going to do this. And then one of Jeff's cousin's kids actually had the surgery when he was 18 months old. And this winter we were able to get together with him, and I went over to him. He's 18 now. And I was like, hey, can you just tell me, like, what are your restrictions at school? What have you dealt with? Do you still have headaches? You know, and he was very forthcoming with information when I said, you know, Connor has the same thing and we're dealing with that right now. He was very nice about it. And I mean, it's awkward, right? Like, this lady married to my cousin who I don't see maybe once a year is asking me these questions, but he did good. And so I said to Connor, you know, oh, look, Colin has, you know, that mark on the back of his head that is, from his surgery. And Connor was like, nope, you know, I'm not going to do it. And then when we really kind of decided that we needed to move this forward, we've talked to him about it and been like, buddy, I think this summer we really are going to need to have your surgery. And then I made probably a huge mom mistake. And I said to him, Connor, if you have to have surgery this summer for your recovery, I will buy you a Nintendo Switch. And I mean, he's excited. I then Googled it and realized they're $300. So I was like, oh, total mom fail. I should have checked the price beforehand. But he said to somebody the other day, he goes, I'm going to have brain surgery, but I'm going to get a Nintendo Switch. And he was totally fine with it. I think it was my mother-in-law. And she just looked at me and I was like, yeah, like what am I going to do? Like, it's fine. So he's settling into it, and he's five. I mean, to him, it's brain surgery. He thinks they're going to open him up from his forehead to the back of his head. Really, it's probably a 6 to 7 inch incision on the back of his head. He'll never see it without a mirror. So, you know, but he's going to get a Nintendo Switch. And so then it's the conversation with, like, my mom, like, hey, I'm taking donations for a Nintendo Switch. Just, you know, if you're thinking about anything you want to spend money on, that might be a good one.
So of the Switch, his fears are kind of assuaged at this point.
Yeah, I get a Nintendo Switch.
Right.
So it's going to be fine. And he is going to have a meltdown. So we go down and we see his neurosurgeon May 21st, which is a Thursday. So we'll leave on Wednesday afternoon. We'll stay with our friends Wednesday night. We're going to take Holden with us this time. So our friends down in New Jersey have a little girl who's older than Holden and a little boy who is Connor's age, and they are best friends. We spend 2 weeks every summer with them. So it's exciting that we get to go see our friends. So we'll see the surgeon on Thursday. We'll go into New York City with our friends on Friday and see the sights. But somewhere between that Thursday appointment and, you know, the next week or so, I'm expecting an epic meltdown of, I don't want to do this, because the conversation with the neurosurgeon on that day is going to be, here's what surgery is going to look like, and this is what we're going to need to do. So it's not his regular doctor's appointments, of which he has many. So I think he'll have an epic meltdown. I think he knows it's coming. I think he also likes when people look at him funny. So he's like, I have to have brain surgery. But you look at a five-year-old and you're like, yeah, right. But then mom and dad are standing behind him saying, yeah, he has to have brain surgery. And people are like, oh, really? You know, so he gets some attention from it. But yeah, he's scared. There's no doubt he's scared. I think the Nintendo Switch is just a big thing right now for him to get. So now I have to be the smart mom and be like, we're not going to get it until we're like on our way to surgery. Right. Like, let's not be dumb, because then it'll be an epic meltdown when we're going in for surgery. So I think, you know, he's kids are crazy strong and they have fears, but they put them on the table, right? Like, just, mom, I'm afraid of the dark. So you turn the light on. Mom, there's something in my closet. So you check the closet, you know? This is, mom, I don't want to die. That's, you know, verbatim something that he said to me. And it's like, okay, you're not going to die, right? Like, I'm afraid of that too, dude. I am scared stiff that the outcome could be that he's not here with me anymore after surgery. And those are the hard things. So you smile and you say, you're going to get a Nintendo Switch because, you know, $300, mom made a bad comment. It could be worse. I could have said like a new car.
You could have. I would have been promising the world. So I'm with you on that.
Well, you know, just try and make him happy. And then the 6-year-old, you know, we're trying to talk to him separately. And I was like, you know, Connor is a big swimmer. He loves to be in the water. The kid just is a fish. And I said to his brother, Holden, I said, buddy, you know, Connor's probably not going to be able to swim that much this summer. So, you know, I just want you to know that he might be sad. And Holden just looks at me and he goes, well, then I'm not going to swim either.
Oh.
And they're like, oh, bless your heart, dude. Yes, you are. Like 2 days into it, you're going to be like, I can't take this anymore. I'm going to go swim. But he wants to be there for him and he wants to help support him. And he's upset. I mean, Holden will cry. So I'm dealing with the fears of a kid going through it and the fears of another kid because his brother is going through it. And just trying to like balance that and not let myself get too upset. Holden every time will make me cry, right? Because he's like, well, I'm worried about my brother. Like he'll say something so sweet that my heart turns into a puddle and my eyeballs start leaking. It's just, that's what he does. And so Connor, I can deal with because I just try and like not get upset, right? I'm like, I'm going to get you a Nintendo Switch. And Holden, I'm not getting you a Nintendo Switch, Holden. I'm just not. You can share. But you know, he says things like, I'm worried about my brother. What happens if something bad happens to him? And trying to process those conversations is way hard. Like, yeah, yeah, I don't know. So, you know, and there's options. The surgeons give you options for child life specialists and you can get in touch with people. And, but at the same time, you're like, don't let one more person into our lives right now. We're just trying to make it through the way we are and have it be as little upheaval as possible. You know, we're lucky in that we have extremely supportive parents. My dad and my stepmom, my mom and my stepfather, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, like they're all right there. And anything we need, we know that financially it's going to be a rough summer, right? Like, we're going to have to go down to not working full time and reaching out to my family and saying we might financially need help and having, you know, my father say to me, I'm going to keep you whole. Don't worry about it. I will help you. It's just a huge relief because not only are you afraid that something's happening to your kid, but you're like, I still have to be able to afford groceries and a mortgage on a new house and like all that stuff. Right. So,
yeah, I'm glad you brought all that up because I was going to ask about Holden and his fears and the fact that there are always unintended or unseen consequences, other things that happen. And in this case, like you said, yeah, the financial burden is a whole different set of fears that you've got to face. And having that kind of support is fantastic. I commend both your families for stepping in and making sure things are good.
We are beyond lucky. Holden is actually an IVF baby. So when we were trying years ago to have kids, we were really struggling. And so we ended up having to go to IVF. And that's a lot of freaking money, right? And our families helped us there too. And knowing that, like, I can go, I call it Banco Dad. So for the most part, when we need financial help, we know we can get it from a lot of places, but my dad and my stepmom have been a big, you know, a big support for us. My stepmother doesn't have other children. She has me and my sister, and my stepfather also doesn't have other children. So we're it. But when my stepmother joined our family, she, her husband had passed away And so she was fairly independent, and she was able to say to my sister and I, if you want to continue your college education post, you know, where you're at right now, I'll help. So that was the first thing, is this woman who was coming into our family. I was 22 when my dad got remarried, and she was just like, I'll help you. I will help you pay. She helped me pay for my master's degree, right? So like, to know that I can step back on them and say, I need help. I called my dad, it was earlier this week, and I called him and I just said, listen, we're in New York State, which has its ups and its downs, y'all. I have a ton of taxes that I pay, a ton, but I also have family paid leave. And this year that is, you know, 60% of your regular salary or capped at $840, whatever. And yeah, it doesn't make up my whole salary. It doesn't. But it will help. And then going to my dad and saying, here are the numbers, right? I'm a numbers person. I spreadsheet everything. But I just said to him, you know, I'm going to be making this much, I think, while I'm out, and I can supplement with vacation. But I still think that financially, just to be sure we don't put ourselves in a bad place, I'm going to need to borrow some money. And it's always borrow. I don't ask for handouts. I always borrow. Even for IVF, we borrowed a lot of money from them, but I said, I will pay you back, and here's the payment plan. And that's how I know that I can say to him, like, I need help. And he's going to say yes. And he knows that I'm accountable. I'm going to be accountable for that money, and I'm going to help. You know, I'm going to get it back to him. Although, honestly, I don't think he worries about it that much. He's willing to help. He's a kid guy, and he adores the kids. I have no nephews. I only have nieces. And so I have the only boys, and my dad gets to spend a lot of time with them in the summer. So having all of them to count on, my mom and my mother-in-law are already lined up to take days when Connor comes home from surgery so that Jeff and I can go to work. They will come stay with him. Like, they're ready. And they are like, anything you need, we are here. I don't know how parents that don't have support structures do it. I really don't. I couldn't. So,
yeah, that's obviously a major
out there
theme.
With no support.
Yeah, I mean, that's a major theme through your story and kind of what we're trying to do right with this project is we're better together, and you've got to find support.
Totally.
And to your point earlier, you've got to be able to ask for it. You've got to get through that fear of asking, and just put it out there. The worst that could have happened is your dad said, "Look, I can't help you this time, but I can help you try to find a solution." Right. So.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's good. And I've got one more question before we wrap it up. I really appreciate all the time. But the last thing I was curious about is if you find yourself or if you see Jeff or any other family member treating Connor differently now than before, now that there's a diagnosis and you know that the surgery is coming up.
I told him he could have a switch.
True.
So yes and no. You know, I think he has this ridiculously cute face, right? So he wears these blue glasses and he's just freaking cute. And I don't know that people treat him differently. We changed school districts when we moved. So in December they changed school districts, and I got a phone call from the nurse at the school, and she was like, what kind of restrictions does he have with PRE? And I'm like, none. If he has a headache, he'll come talk to you. You'll give him medicine and he'll go lay down. Like, he doesn't have any restrictions yet. Will he next year? Yeah, no doubt. But right now he doesn't. So I think, you know, at school, he was treated with kid gloves for a little bit. We have a place up in the Thousand Islands in the summertime that we go to, and his diagnosis was so late in the summer that a lot of the people up there haven't really seen him. So I don't know how they're going to react. Grandparents don't treat him any differently. I think if you looked at him and knew he was a sick kid, you might, but he is totally normal. Like, he, other than saying like, I have a headache or my eyes don't feel right, he's normal. Like, he's pushing his brother. He's hitting. He's punching. He's screaming. He's coloring. He's playing Mario Brothers. He's asking to go swimming. He's, you know, people don't look at him and know. It's not like you're looking at somebody who last week was walking and this week is in a wheelchair.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that couldn't happen. Literally, this disease is such a way that he could wake up tomorrow morning and not have function in his legs before the surgery takes place. So that stuff can happen. But in his particular case, that's not where he is right now. So he's a normal kid. Sometimes I will yell at his brother and be like, if you push him in the back of the head one more time, so help me. Because at the end of this summer, after he has the surgery, you could kill him. Right. So like trying to talk to his brother and not lose my mind because I'm trying to protect him, I think is hard. But Holden will tell us, you spend more time with Connor. You worry more about Connor. And he's right. He's right. Connor goes to doctor's appointments that Holden doesn't have to go to. Connor comes home sick from school when Holden wouldn't. And, you know, the one thing that I try and remind Holden is that every time your brother leaves school or goes to a doctor's appointment and he gets a treat, the first thing he asks me when we get him a treat after his doctor's appointment is, can we get one for Holden? So, like, they're trying to find their balance. But I think, you know, people haven't treated him differently yet. When he has a scar that goes back, you know, off the back of his head, I think he'll get a lot of questions. And again, these kids, I didn't do this on purpose, but my poor kids at school often have to answer the question, is this your mom? Because I'll go to pick them up and I have a mohawk and people will be like, whoa, but other kids look at them and they're like, is this your mom? And they're like, yeah. And it, like, they don't really think about it twice, but they get that question a lot. So I think maybe it will soften the blow for when Connor ends up having people that look at him a little funny. Because he has the scar and he's not a kid that's going to be able to grow long hair. He has Jeff's hair. It is like curly, thick, crazy hair. And if you let it grow out long, it grows in every direction. It doesn't grow in one direction. So like, he's going to have short hair. You're going to be able to see it. So right now, no, people aren't treating him, a whole lot of different other than, you know, we worry about him more than we worry about Holden, in a lot of ways, but Holden has also been, you know, Holden was a hard baby and easy kid and Connor was a super easy baby, but man, he's putting me through the paces now.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of love between the two of them. So that's awesome.
Oh, God,
in
yeah.
and of itself. And that will help with everything afterwards too, in terms of recovery. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, with that, I've taken like 50 minutes of your time. So I want to be conscious of that and just kind of end asking if there's anything else that you want to, make sure that gets out into the world.
You know, look up Chiari. People don't know what it is. Chiari. And if you have a kid who has a ton of headaches and feels nauseous and stuff, go see a neurologist. I think it's important that we try and take care of these things. But I think a big message that I just try and live by myself is, one, don't have any regrets. No matter what you do or what the outcome is, don't regret anything. Because if it didn't happen, you wouldn't be where you are now. I was in a car accident at 16 that almost killed me. And I don't regret one second of one thing I had to go through. And I have scars on my face. I have scars on my hands, on my legs. I don't care because that put me in where I am today. So don't regret anything. And if you have a fear that you think is mounting and you don't know what to do with yourself, talk to someone. Talk to anyone. It does not matter, because if that person cares at all, they're going to help you find the right person to talk to. It may not fix the fear. It may not solve the fear, but talk to someone. I've worked in medicine and behavioral health for a long time, and talking has amazing impact on people. So don't let your fears shut you down. Address them. And when you're afraid of addressing them, get help to address them. Your best friend, your neighbor, I don't care who, your dog, I don't care, someone to talk to is probably the biggest thing, because our suicide rates are just astounding and we need to get people the help that they need. So that is what I would say.
Absolutely. And if you're having trouble trying to do that on your own, look up the No Fear Project on Facebook, and there's a lot of people in there that will jump up to to listen. And sometimes it's easier to talk to strangers first, right? Or somebody else that maybe you don't know, someone else that's going through something. We get a lot of that
message
in the group.
The Mohawk. Right. You can message the Mohawk mom. That's me. Anytime. I'd be happy to give you any advice that I have. Anytime.
Awesome.
I'm there. I'm in there. I'm everywhere. So.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Well, we really appreciate it. And we will talk to you again soon and follow up and watch Connor's journey.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks. I want to thank Kim again for joining us and for her candor. I plan to follow up with her soon to get an update on Connor and how the pandemic has impacted her and her family. That amount of strength is amazing, but it is not endless. As we wrap up this episode, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. You make the group and show possible. A special thank you to our producers, the Money, Motivation, and Motherhood podcast, Dava Sylvia, and the Endurance for Everyone podcast. The support of all of our patrons during this trying time is humbling. Please be sure to subscribe to the No Fear Project on your favorite podcast app and consider leaving a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really does help people find the show. And finally, remember, the way forward is together. The time to conquer is now.
Thank you for listening to the No Fear Project. Original music is from Josh and Dean. Join us on social media by searching The No Fear Project on Facebook and Instagram. Check out thenofearproject.com for more information, including in-person presentations on fear customized for your organization. The No Fear Project is committed to helping those with mental illness get help and to defeating the stigma. If you have any thoughts of harming yourself or suicide, please contact the Suicide Prevention Hotline for help now at 800-273-8255. Remember, you are not alone. The No Fear Project is a production of Paragon Media, all rights reserved.